Welcome to the Tomcast. My name is Laura Moran Bailey, and my guest is Todd Robert Anderson. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on your program.
Great. It's been a while since you've been on, huh?
Yeah, it's been quite a while. Yeah.
So this is our Halloween version.
So exciting. It's going to be super scary, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Super scary.
You've got, like, sound effects you can add in later. Like,
yeah, it'll be just... I'm sure it'll be nothing but sound effects.
Okay, so I have a question for you, and the answer can in no way be political.
Okay. That's okay. Fair.
All right. So the question for tonight is, what scares you?
Ooh. What scares me? Well... Like in real life, what scares me?
We can start there. Do you have a lot of fears in your real life?
Well, I think so. I they sneak up on me. Like when I get actually terrified, it sneaks up on me. It usually happens in the middle of the night when I'm half asleep.
And these are like real concerns, or
no? I think it's just like I get terrified. I think you know I'll hear a noise and it'll wake. You know, if I'm half asleep, then I assume it's like somebody in the house
out here in suburbia.
Yeah, out here in suburbia. This isn't suburbia enough.
Right. Gotcha. Where we are, we have the coyotes around us, so all night it's yip.
Oh, yeah, we have coyotes around here, too. They don't make a lot of noise, though.
Oh, yeah. As they start to call, and then the dogs get in on it, on the action. And
oh, yeah, I don't think they make noise because what they're hunting for is probably the
And if you've ever heard raccoons having sex, wow.
Oh.
There's a sound.
Oh,
she got a sound designer out there. It's kind of like a banshee sound.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a really... And when you go out there and look at them, they just look at you like, what? Like,
what? You know, yeah,
like
what
you... you've invaded their territory.
Take a picture, it'll last longer.
Exactly. So, when you were growing up, though, like, the first horror films that you saw, like, what was the first one that really got to you?
Well, if you count Jaws as a horror movie, that
was... Sure, it's a monster movie.
That was the first one I saw. Yeah. But I saw the TV-edited version.
Mm.
But it still scared me.
I wonder what they took out of the TV version.
A little bit of gore. Most notably when Quint gets eaten.
Oh, right.
It sort of he does the thing with the feet, which to me in that sequence is the scariest
exactly
fucking part.
Right.
Where he's like doing its feet and he's like, God damn it! I can't get a foothold! And he's just slipping towards the shark. So like right when he slips towards the shark, then they cut, you know, to whatever, somebody reacting.
Right.
When it cuts back, instead of that elongated chewing, ooh, it's just he's already,
and the blood coming out of his mouth,
yeah,
so gloopy,
yeah,
kind of.
Ooh.
Oh, so nasty.
But in the TV version, it's just it cuts to him and he's already in the shark and sliding into the water, so you don't see
absolutely
any of that stuff.
I you know, people trivialize Spielberg often, it's easy to do because he's so popular, but I just love the things that he does so well are his character introductions. When you see, you know, the Richard Dreyfuss character arriving and there's all this chaos, and you know, he just has a great way of filling the screen with everybody's there. And he does the same thing in the Raiders of the Lost Ark where there's just no empty space in the frame.
Yeah, it's like really neat.
And
it's a very immersive thing that he does,
like,
which
that,
still does, I think, visually.
Right.
No, I just think his movies don't pack the punch. I mean, he's doing these historic dramas and all that stuff. Like Lincoln, I was like, this has got to be the least interesting story about the Civil War you could have chosen to do. Just Lincoln, was it?
Richmond, Virginia, yeah, a lot of it,
yeah. Lincoln just talking with other white people about abolishing slavery in a conference room for 2.5 hours. Fuck you. There's a war you could have, you know.
Yeah, well, see, war is scary. You know, that's another...
War is scary, war, yeah, is for fighting. Sure. I do, like, if I have nightmares about being overpowered by, you know, a soldier type or...
Really?
You know, somebody with weapons.
See, I have fantasies about being... Oh, never mind.
That's a
whole other show.
That's a different podcast.
We can do that later. No problem. No, I remember, like, yeah, coming up, because I was born in 67.
Mm-hmm.
So coming up through the 70s, there was still sort of the remnants of Vietnam, which you could see through the early horror
sure.
films, you know, Texas Chainsaw and this kind of...
Texas Chainsaw is such a good Vietnam War allegory.
And
people don't realize
it's a beautiful
that.
Film, too, in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like, there's some gorgeous daytime... our upcoming film, which I will, you know, get to later, but we definitely did a lot of homages to that sort of sunshine. How can sunshine be creepy? Like, let's...
Yeah.
You know, like, it's easy to make the darkness creepy.
Yeah,
you know?
The thing that I was... Like, when that movie turns, it really does. Like, because it, like, for a while, for almost half of it, it's kind of a clunky kind of slasher teen.
It has this terrible, like, porn dialogue.
Yeah.
It has this dialogue that makes no sense whatsoever.
And
it's
the acting is terrible.
Yeah.
And then, but then when...
It's bizarro.
Leatherface hits the guy in the head and then drags him
That's
and then slams that
sliding
door.
It's almost a two-act
door.
Movie, really. It's like
yeah.
before Leatherface and after Leatherface.
Yeah. Before Leatherface is like, what the fuck is this? And then after Leatherface is like, oh my God!
Oh my God, OMG, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really hard. A lot of the movies in the 70s, I was joking about porn, but there was a lot of crossover between
oh, for
porn
sure.
actors doing low budget, sort of the exploitation, like I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, and Wes Craven's early movies
yeah,
too.
Crazy.
Last House on the Left was all porn. There
well,
it was
the only
all
women
porn
they could
people.
Get to be like naked and stabbed were pretty much ex porn
right.
actresses
or people or like dudes who are willing to, you know, do the most graphic
right.
version of recreating rape.
Yeah,
were,
absolutely.
Creepy porn stars.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's all related in there, but.
Not that all. I'm not saying all porn stars are creepy, but
no.
the ones that Wes Craven dug up certainly
yeah,
were.
Just right.
I don't want to. I'm not slut shaming.
No,
that's not what I'm doing. I'm not slut shaming male porn stars.
Also coming up in the 70s, like my family was not religious at all,
mm-hmm.
but all of the satanic, you know,
yeah, did
the Exorcist, of course.
Did that work for you?
Oh
did
my
it
God,
scare
that's
you?
That's still my favorite.
Because that movie didn't scare me. I didn't see
really?
It until I was in college and I was
wow.
brought up Catholic.
Yeah, well...
So I was like, eh.
You're like, yeah, I see this every
This
time.
Is the Bible. This is just the Bible. Yeah.
No, I
but
think
But Nightmare on Elm Street scared the shit out of me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, that... Like, the first time I saw unedited horror movies, it was a double feature at my friend Darren's house. We watched Poltergeist.
Okay.
Which scared the
yeah.
crap out
yeah,
of me.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we watched Nightmare on Elm Street, which was also one of the... I think probably one of the first... It was definitely the first R-rated horror movie I'd ever seen.
Right.
It may have been one of the first R-rated movies, period. But that shit scared the crap out of me. And I lived in the basement of my house. And my dad, you know, very sweetly built me a room because I was a teenager. You know, it was time for me to have some alone time.
Right. That's a whole other podcast,
Yeah, that's
too.
A whole other podcast. That's on your other podcast. The one about your weird
being overwhelmed,
yeah.
but yeah.
So, but he built like he put a window in it to make it feel like I wasn't in the goddamn basement, but the window looked out at the water heater. You know, so I got home, and the window in my room looks out, and like what looks like. The place Freddy Krueger would have.
The boiler room, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I did not sleep.
Well, even when those basement windows are street level, they're creepy because all you can see are like legs going by.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And spiders or
well,
whatever.
We had those and they let the light in.
Yeah.
But I was in the middle of the woods, so it was just bushes outside.
Well, again, like with Spielberg and Nightmare on Elm Street and all those, that's began sort of the suburban horror, right? You know, it was kids
for sure.
in the suburbs and the sort of...
Yeah, yeah. Know. Oh, and interestingly, we were talking about Texas Chainsaw and that was Poltergeist. It was... Toby, or how do you say his name? Toby Hooper?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that how you say
yeah,
it?
Toby Hooper.
I mean, it's spelled Tobe.
Tobe, yeah, it's Toby, I think. Yeah.
There should be a Y at the end.
Right, there should be. Well, you know.
But it looks like Tobe.
They ran out of money, probably during
the They couldn't afford that Y.
But also, Freddy is like the beginning of the sort of, you know, the funny bad man.
quippy.
Sort of, that makes it quippy. Sort of even creepier.
Yeah.
I was just reading something about that, that's sort of... Yeah, I think that horror, to me now, is sort of taken over where science fiction used to be sort of the social commentary or the marker. Now horror is like every generation, the monster tells you something about that generation.
I tend to agree with you. I think that horror, unfortunately, is getting away from that.
Well, no, the generations are just getting worse. They're just stupider, the young people.
It's the dumb young people.
Right, their music is terrible, and they have no respect for their elders and all that stuff.
I don't mind a Blumhouse... I don't mind a Blumhouse movie from time to time for what they are, but they don't have that allegorical element that I like.
Right, they're not resonating.
Yeah.
I would like to say.
I'm trying to think of the last horror movie I saw. Mm. I mean, I don't really think it qualifies as a horror movie. It's more of a thriller, but it feels like a horror movie. A lot of the time is Green Room.
Oh, I did not see Green Room.
You have to see Green Room.
Okay.
If you like horror, you will like this movie.
Did you see The Babadook?
I did see The Babadook.
Did you like it?
No.
No? Really?
No, and it was very allegorical, but it was too slow for me. It was too slow, and I knew what was happening, and I knew what they were saying, and it was too... It wore its allegory on its sleeve. I like to think about it later and go, oh, shit, like John Carpenter's The Thing.
Right. You know,
first time I saw that, it was just about the roller coaster ride of terror I was on.
Right.
But then the more I thought about it and repeat viewings, the more I was like, oh, there's so much allegory in here about race relations, about masculinity.
Definitely.
About
man versus nature, yeah.
Yeah,
it's like a Jack London, jacked up on steroids.
Yeah, kind of, yeah, you know? Super. Yeah, and I am a man, and I'm glad that we are making Ghostbusters movies with women now, because it is better, certainly better than Ghostbusters 2, anyway.
Yeah, right.
It could have been funnier. I liked it enough. Did you like it?
I liked it. I think that... They could have reined in some of the performances, you know.
Sure.
I think that they were just trying to throw the kitchen sink
at... It's too ad-libby for you?
Just, what's her name? The blonde from SNL.
Was
playing this kind of quirky scientist.
I liked her, though.
I like her in the show, and I used to watch her in the Big Gay Sketch Show all the time. She's a really funny person. But I think that they were just like, more. I can imagine the director just screaming at her like, more. Well, I don't think it was her fault. Right, I think it was just like,
No. But I thought she worked for me fine. I mean, she's so quirky and kind of pansexual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I don't know. Kate McKinnon.
She does an amazing Justin Bieber.
Yeah, yeah. Her Bieber's great. That alien abduction thing was seriously made me laugh so hard. Amazing. I only watch SNL on, you know, YouTube the couple days after.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, watch this.
You can't be bothered to sit there and watch it.
No, I'm not going to watch it. No. But that one really did make me laugh.
I must be like, oh, this is not my generation, was did you see It Follows?
Yes, that was another one. Like, it
bore the tits off of me.
The ones that the critics are really
it
like.
Blows, is what I'm gonna call it.
No, I agree. I the ones that the critics have really been calling out in the last few years, like The Witch, I didn't like. The Witch doesn't have a third act. It's a two-act movie. And, yeah, it's gorgeous, and it's well-acted and all
wasn't
that.
Like It Follows, like, at Sundance and some shit, or Cannes.
It was in
somewhere.
It follows, like,
really
and critically acclaimed.
Like,
and it was, like... It was
definitely Cannes, because I remember thinking the French must have just thought because it was so slow, it was, like, important, you know? But it was... No.
Right. Well, and it's about... And, like,
nothing
people
happens.
Were saying, oh, it's so great, it's, like, a movie about people... About kids being afraid of STDs or whatever, and I was like,
"Which kid's afraid of an STD now?"
First of all,
I grew up in AIDS. Okay,
yeah, that's dumb.
Yeah.
Two, that's what teen horror has been about since the 1970s.
Right, the virgin. So
kids having sex are the ones who die. If you do sex and drugs, you die.
Right.
And that all that movie did was say, "It is the sex."
Right.
You know, it just made it. It wasn't even like it didn't have the subtlety of Friday the 13th.
Well, I don't particularly like inarticulate. I mean, the first film that my husband and I made was a zombie film, and so people kind of assume that I'm really into zombies, but it's not, you know, to me, the slow moving, inarticulate doesn't frighten me because it doesn't have that sort of intention.
Zombies scare the crap out of me, and I have nightmares about them. And here's why: it's a slow moving ones. It's not the rabid ones. You know,
not the 28 days.
It's not the 28 days or the movie Rabid, which I just watched. Have you ever seen that? Mm-mm. It's an early Cronenberg movie with.
Oh, I love Cronenberg.
Speaking of porn,
it's always scary.
Yeah, it's and gross.
Yeah,
this one's pretty gross. But this is an early one. It's a Corman produced one, so it doesn't have like a lot of the pretension that Cronenberg can have. Mm-hmm. It's just a 90-minute terror show. And it's Marilyn Chambers.
What's it called again?
It's called Rabid.
Rabid.
And Marilyn Chambers being, in watching it again, I hadn't seen it in forever, but I watched it again, and I was like, she was a really good actress. Mm-hmm. You know? She got fucked over because she did porn.
You have to act like you like porn for so long. You'd have to be a good actress eventually.
Well, you would have to be a good actress. But she's very good in this movie. But it's like she has this weird thing. It's basically a vagina in her armpit.
So Cronenberg.
Very Cronenberg. And I had a debate.
The typewriter's a vagina. Everything's a vagina with this man.
It's a vagina. You put VHS tapes.
The man's afraid of vaginas. Let's just put
He's terrified of goopy, goopy vaginas. Which The Thing has a lot of that in it, too. That imagery is, like, all over the place.
Well, The Thing was, like, sort of a merging of being afraid of the natural world and the science world. Like, it was like, again, Frankenstein on, even though they didn't cause the thing,
right.
Just watching the sort of, but also all those characters, like you said, it's a very masculine film.
Yeah.
And, they're, you know, the Quaker Oats guy kind of scares me in that movie because he's just got that,
Wilford Brimley?
He's just got that still, like.
Yeah, that was pre-diabetes, so, as he pronounces it. So, pre-diabetes. He had a lot of energy to be creepy.
Oh, right.
Because he did those, you know,
but, you know, it's also like the dogs and, I mean, just... Like,
It's
just... Oh.
It's creepy, but it's all greasy, and there's a lot of vagina imagery.
Right.
So in Rabid, she's not only got a vagina, but, like, I had a debate with the guy I was watching it with, because out of it comes what looks... You could call it a penis that comes out of the vagina and sticks into the into her victims. Mm. You know, and then she sucks their blood, and they become, like, rabid, crazy zombie types. But I was like, I don't think it's a penis at all. I think it's supposed to be her clit, which Cronenberg finds wildly terrifying. He doesn't understand it. And it'll hurt you somehow.
Well, think about Alien. Like, that was like the penis and the vagina. So it's got this like multiple mouths coming out.
Oh, yeah. And it's very drippy.
Ugh, nasty. Yeah, a lot of KY coming off of Alien. Like,
That is not a...
Somebody should have gotten ass up the Alien. I'm just saying.
It's not a menopausal vagina on any level.
No.
Yeah.
Completely active. If you were going to make up a horror film tonight, what would be... What subject matter would you want to tackle, or monster?
Well, I would want to do I wrote a novel that I had written it as a screenplay first, and then I wrote it as a novel because I was like, nobody's ever going to know.
No one wants to make
screenplay. Yeah. So I'll write it as a novel. But the concept was it's a road trip movie. It's a road movie. But the road trip happens during the apocalypse, and it's biblical in nature.
Wow.
But, like, huge natural disasters coupled with monsters and creepy stuff. And it starts in L.A., and it's a guy driving cross-country because his mom's alone. Oh. And she's like, yeah, my agent back in the day when I told him, he's like, his mom...
God bless
shouldn't
agents.
Be his girlfriend, and I'm like,
should it
no.
be some hot Playboy model he's trying to get to?
Yeah, shut up. It's cooler if it's his mom. He just wants to go help his mom. Aww. But yeah, it's just like a road trip, and there's monsters and natural disasters and zombies and everything.
That sounds expensive.
Prohibitively.
Yeah.
But I wrote it before... Like, I wrote the screenplay before Van Helsing came out.
Oh, right.
And I had joked to my friends, it's like, I want to write the most expensive movie ever, and I wrote it, and then Van Helsing came out, which at the time was the most expensive.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I didn't have enough yelling in my movie.
Coming from the DIY filmmaking generation, we've all now we stopped putting Black Ops helicopters in our scripts a long time ago, you know, like, sort of like, you know, you're like, interior bus, day, oh, how the hell am I going to get a bus? Mm-hmm. Screw that. Exterior bus stop, day, like, everything is, yeah, like, adjusted.
Interior shower, oh my God, day. Yeah,
I know. Yeah. I met an agent recently, or a manager, he fancies himself. And yeah, he's looking for the next, like, Bourne Identity off of a no-name writer. And I'm like, we don't write the Bourne Identity. Nobody would buy the Bourne Identity from us. We can't make it. So why the hell would we write something that takes place in eight European cities?
Right, and, right. Like, what are you talking, you know, about? Like, it's like, you know, you're not clear.
I already know that you're not knowing what you're doing. That you think that, you know, if they want to make the Bourne Identity, they'll go hire Joe Schmo that they know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And they'll go write it.
And they have the rights to the,
yeah, Bourne, exactly, Identity. They found the book for the, right, right, yeah, yeah. It's got to be a derivative work.
Or, yeah, that's you know, dumb.
Yeah.
That's so dumb.
Yeah, well.
I also think, too, you just made me, we were talking about Spielberg before. Like, when Spielberg's budgets were tighter, mm-hmm, I thought he was more creative.
No, absolutely. Well, you know, the, well, and you have almost to be. Everybody knows the story around Jaws, but the fact that the shark didn't work has created all of the most memorable sequences. The fact that they can't show him, and they have to use the music, and they just have to show the raft being pulled along, and, you know, that's what made it this wonderful subconscious film. Otherwise, it would have been a dorky film with a big rubber shark. Right. That would have been, never made it out of the gate.
Probably. It would have been Sharknight.
Right, in Sharknado. Or
oh, Sharknado is way worse than Sharknight.
Yeah.
I love the Sharknado films.
We were going to follow it up with Kittenami. A kitten tsunami that would kind of come in.
That'd be great. I would watch the hell of little tiny, yeah, little, yeah, little Siamese, yeah, cats coming out of the, with their claws out.
Yeah, yeah,
that sounds great.
Yeah, you know,
Sharknight is the river. Did you see that one?
Sharknight.
That's where they're river sharks.
River,
it's
sharks,
a river shark movie.
Okay.
It's a bunch,
like,
of kids.
So, like, Deliverance? Do they, like, end up, well, with banjos? And
kids going to an island in, on river a lake shark, in a river. It's like a river island, I guess. Wow. But then there are sharks. Turns out there are sharks.
A river island? You're just making this shit up.
No, I swear to God. I swear to God. I went to see it because it was like Shark Night 3D. And I was like, what's that? Yeah. And it's like river sharks. I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I got to see this. And I had a good time.
But, you know, I think that, like, when you were talking about zombies before, originally the zombies were sort of, you know, one of those commie metaphors, like the aliens and that kind of thing. And then, and a little bit of Vietnam War, too. But now I have to think that it has something to do with the internet, with the crushing mass thought, mass movement, the idea that you can create a meme and it'll be on everyone's lips the next day.
Yeah,
and it's, you know,
yeah, that's
kind
a
of
good point.
We're disconnected and connected, like kind of hive mind mentality.
Well, it's terrifying, and it's the relentless, you know? Yeah, and it's the relentless, and that's what scares me about those slow moving, like the undead zombies,
right, the
versus
crush,
the rabid ones, because we got off of that. I don't,
yeah,
know how we tangentially,
shit,
got off of that.
God.
I'm so unfocused, but.
It was the vagina talk.
It was the vagina. The vagina always distracts
always,
me.
Always, yeah.
It's like, where's the vagina? But the relentless nature of the individual zombies coupled with the fact that they're constantly growing in numbers.
Right.
It's viral.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah, viral, exactly.
And that's what scares me.
Exactly.
And it's more, I think the slow-moving ones are more viral-feeling than the fast-moving ones. Mm-hmm. Even though the fast-moving ones are generally actually a viral in the story, but the undead ones that just keep coming, like the Night of the Living Dead,
yeah,
you know, the which, you know, mm, Romero says is not, they're not zombies.
Right,
they're,
well,
ghouls.
It wasn't even, yeah.
But everybody started calling them,
course,
zombies,
yeah,
so it's different. But that movie, just that they're in the farmhouse and the more they kill, the more show up. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, scares that concept. And that's, I think that's what you're saying in, mm-hmm, in your metaphor about social media. And if you read social media, if you're on it, and you, you know, basically say okay to every friend, bizarre friend,
right,
request,
right,
that come, then you slowly start thinking, oh my God, where are these people coming,
well,
from?
It's too much exposure. We never used to know this much about people in our lives.
That's
and their
true.
Thoughts and their friends' thoughts.
That's
and their,
true.
I mean, I can just about stand the friends I have. Then when I have to watch their relatives' comments, and then, you know, then it's just, then I have to,
yeah,
question their sanity. Like, really? These are your friends?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I have unfriended people for their friends. Like, I just, You're gonna let this crap go on your page. I have to then.
Right.
Before I figured out I could just unfollow and remain friends. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I also take a lot of Adderall, so sometimes I just go, nee, that's it. You're out. Nope.
F off. No, and I've for the most part resisted that urge. I know you didn't want to talk politics, but resisted that urge through this election cycle because I do want to maintain. Like, some of these people aren't my friends. They're just Facebook friends of
Facebook. You just
want
to know. You want to know what they're
thinking. But I want to know what they're thinking, and I want to hear their point of view, and I want to try to understand it on some level.
Oh, my God.
And I did that for a long time, you know.
Yeah.
And then people would post things like, remember to, you know, you have shut down and stopped listening. And I'm like, no, I have. And I'm done. Until the 8th, listening to the debate that's happening. And after that, then we can start a new conversation where maybe we actually change
shit. Well, I was, of course, I was a big Bernie supporter. And I found it really disappointing that that the Hillary supporters couldn't even wait 30 seconds to stop the badgering. As soon as he was out of the race, it was like, you are going to be with us, aren't you? You're not going to blow it for everyone. You know,
right.
I was like, y'all just need to not poke the progressive bear at the moment. Just let us take a breath.
Yeah.
Because it's very difficult for us to go that way.
Yeah.
And just, we're about ready to let it all burn. Like, you know, something out of a Batman villain, you know, where it's just, don't poke us. Like, let us breathe.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I have a friend who hates Donald Trump, but wants Donald Trump to get elected, so the country spirals downward.
Absolutely.
And
there's
falls apart,
and
then it actually has to rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, my fear is that if we elect another neo-liberal, that a lot of what's wrong will just get swept under the carpet, and everyone will be like, oh, it's all right, because it's not Trump.
Well,
and we won't pay attention to what Hillary does, and
that,
we won't, you know.
That's what every election cycle winds up being. Right. It seems to me like once you get closer to the actual election date, then and I don't want to say a lesser of two evils because that's become politically incorrect,
right.
But it comes down to stopping just the bigger nightmare.
Right. I mean, the only argument that finally won me over my dear husband, who is not a citizen of this country and cannot vote, but he was basically like, you know, you just cannot let someone symbolically like that be on top. You can't give the legitimacy to his followers, whether or not you think he can get anything done, whether you think Hillary will get anything else done.
Right.
You cannot let that figurehead.
Right.
Symbolically. And that's really, the office of president is pretty much symbolic. People bang on about the Supreme Court justices, but many things are decided at state level that, you know, it's very little, you know, oh, finger on the button. You know, you still have to get Congress involved. You can't really, you know, but and I don't actually think that Trump wants to be president. I think if he got in, he would just shit himself, and, you know, I don't know
what he wants, and I don't really care.
But yes,
I mean,
can you have that on the world stage? Can you?
But I was never. I have not been on board. I really haven't been on board. I liked a lot of the stuff Bernie said, but I didn't understand how he was going to accomplish any of it.
Right.
And I do think that,
again, symbolically,
to
have someone even just saying the things.
No. And I think the things that he said were very good.
Yeah.
And I think that he will be involved, especially if Hillary is elected. He will be involved, and I think that's good, and I think he can do a lot of good from the place that he'll be in.
Right.
Interesting
that she didn't feel she could choose him as a
running mate.
Yeah.
I thought that was weird, but it was so contentious.
I think she was afraid she'd get shot. Oh, I didn't say that on a public podcast.
Oh, my gosh. Maybe. I don't know.
We can edit that out later.
Yeah. That's not something I had thought about, but that's interesting. But, you know, in any event, I mean, I think Hillary is certainly competent as far as our existing system is concerned. And I think she will maintain the status quo. And I do, once again, think I would rather maintain the status quo than go the other direction that my friend thinks, you know, would be better for the country, change things quicker. And I'm like, I don't think I want to take that kind of wild risk.
Right? It is kind of a little bit risky, yes.
But, I the thing is I think after the election, on November 9th. That's when people continuing
to pay attention
to talk this conversation that sort of started arising about the concept of we live in an oligarchy and not an actual democracy, which like started, you know, quietly and got louder and louder and louder, and then became the Bernie campaign and the Trump campaign.
Right. I know. Is that interesting?
Yeah. Because they're like basically opposite sides of the same coin.
Right, but it's still the foundation.
Yeah.
Still
the whole broader. It's about changing a broken system. And I totally agree that mm-hmm. it's a broken system. I have no idea how to fix it, but if everybody goes quiet, because I think it's become so fervent about not getting Trump that everybody's going to go, oh.
Right. Oh, shit. What was our plan?
Oh, shit. Thank God. Let's get some sleep, you guys. Do you guys like the new
sandwich or something?
Do you like the new Lethal Weapon TV right. series? It's so much fun.
Walking Dead, dude.
Walking Dead. We got to find out. We're going to find out what Negan does. Negan. Isn't that his name? Negan?
I don't know. That's not the thing. After you make a zombie film, everyone assumes you watch The Walking Dead, which I haven't seen more than 20 seconds of it.
I watch it only out. Because I like zombies. That's mm. it. It's such a frustrating show.
Yeah, is it just...
Well, and it's telling how into it James Woods is.
Oh.
You know, just unpack that for a minute.
Oh my God. It's like a tastemaker website where it's like, does James Woods like this? Does James Woods.
Well, I have enough, you know, right-wingers in my Twitter feed to see when they retweet James Woods, but somebody just did that.
I never even thought about that guy. I used to like him when he was a younger actor.
Oh, man, I loved James Woods when I was a kid.
Bestseller.
Bestseller's awesome,
that movie,
right?
Isn't he great?
He's a hitman. Brian Denny, he's a novelist. So good.
Amazing.
And I like that movie. Nobody knows this movie, but he did a movie called Cop.
Yeah,
that's all it was called. It was Cop. It was a cop thriller. But I memorized his monologue at the end of the movie.
Oh, nice. Did you audition with it?
I never auditioned with it. I just knew it because I loved it. I would rewind it.
Do they even do that anymore? Do people go in with prepared?
No.
Never. It's all video now, right?
Never in my career. That was for college only.
Right.
Yeah, but never in my career has anybody been like... You read the copy and then like, do you have a Shakespearean monologue?
The Patrick Henry speech would be a good, like, you know, give me liberty or give me death.
Yeah, that'd be good.
You know, just go in there with like the suit. Well, I grew up in Virginia, so that was, you know, we spent a lot of time on colonial history.
I would probably do James Woods at the end of Cop or Kevin Costner's Bull Durham. I like that monologue. That was another monologue I memorized.
Wow. Yeah,
because I love that one.
Really?
In Bull Durham?
Well,
When Susan Sarandon is saying, you know, I have to choose between you and Tim Robbins, who I'm going to be with for the season. And he's like, after 10 years in the minors, whatever the number is, I don't
right.
try out. And he says, I don't believe in something. And she says, well, what do you believe in? And then that monologue after that is killer.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, I was... Kevin Costner to me, you know, when you're cooking and you put too much salt, like in a soup, there's this thing where you just put potatoes in to like bring out the salt. I consider like Kevin Costner kind of a blanding agent, sort of in many of the films that he's been in.
Sure, know, like, yeah, he is.
Most notably Robin Hood, because I'm such a Alan Rickman fan, and rest his soul. But
Robin Hood was terrible.
Oh yeah, but he's fantastic in it though.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah.
But it was one of those things where they almost couldn't take out the movie because he was just getting so upstaged by this sort of new actor that nobody knew that much about. You know, same thing with like Die Hard and stuff like that. It was pretty good. At least he had an equal footing on that one.
But. Yeah. I mean, Bruce Willis was good in the first Die Hard. What has become of my beloved Bruce Willis?
No.
He's such a grump.
Reds was funny.
I did. I liked Red. Yeah, that was good.
Especially for John Malkovich.
Totally it was really fun.
I miss all the character actors. I feel like we're, like, losing all of those guys. You talk about James Woods, and you talk about just, like, Willem Dafoe, like, weird-headed, strange guys.
Yeah, like a Jeff Goldblum a lead in any given B-movie. Like, well, the B-movies are gone. That's why. Well, like, yeah, character guys are relegated to being part of a package deal that gets sold by the major agencies in town. So they're never going to be heading up interesting indie/B movies. It doesn't happen anymore.
A couple months ago, I saw they did an anniversary screening of The Usual Suspects down in San Pedro, which I had forgotten that's where they shot it. And Bryan Singer was there doing a Q&A and everything. And I was like looking at all the guys in that film, like, where did all of them go? Like, where the hell did Kevin Pollak go? Like, he's amazing. And, like, Pollak.
Well, he has a podcast.
Yeah, does he? There you go. Hey, I'd love to be on it.
And plays poker. Podcast and plays poker.
Oh, yeah, was he part of that Dinner for Five thing that was a TV show that they were
Was Jon Favreau? Yeah, I don't know if he was. He probably was on it at some point. I liked that show,
actually. Yeah, I did, too. My friend, so pre-podcasty.
Yeah, it was pre-podcasty. Yeah, yeah. My friend actually plays poker with Kevin Pollak from time to time. It's just like somebody's house.
Well, we miss him.
I miss him, yeah, for sure. I mean, he still does.
Well, it's just they're not the roles for it. They're just not writing anything that's not.
Yeah. You know. But that was the best Pollak ever was. He was so good.
There's so many smart ass lines of The Usual Suspects. I mean,
he's so good.
Chris McQuarrie, right? That's his script. Is that McQuarrie?
I don't know.
There's
a lot of good. But he's such a badass in that movie. And he doesn't normally play badasses. He's usually like the goofy best friend or the annoying.
But the reason he could be the badass now is because he just does so little. And that's the, you know, actors, like, if you want to be powerful, do nothing.
He just looks nonplussed.
Yeah, when he's like reaching under and they're like reaching for the guns, he's getting his oily rag. Like, think you brought enough guys? You know, he's like hilarious, you know? Like, I love when you go to a Q&A and you, like, save up your question and you think it's going to be, like, so significant, and the filmmaker's like, because I was like, I don't want to ask, but I was like, Brian, what about the jump cuts? Like, your use of jump cuts, that's so interesting. And he's like, yeah, that was my editor. I don't know, he's obsessed with it. I was like, really? Like, wow.
And I just said it was okay when I saw it. That was it. When I get interviewed as an actor, and people ask me about my process, I'm always like, ugh. Because I don't want to give a disappointing answer like that. But at the same time, I'm like,
first let's make a DB.
I don't fucking know. I memorize my lines and I show up and hope it works out.
It must be different. I mean, as a writer, it's a different. If I could make one process work for every script, I would be so happy. But every time, it's completely different.
Like, well, I think that's true about acting, too. Oh, my God. You can't approach each project the same way because they're all different. You have to figure it out.
But it's frustrating because you just think, oh, okay, this time I'll do that note card thing, or this time I'll do that elaborate step outline, or I'll create that lookbook, or I'll think of the actor first, or I'll, it's like, no, this one's going to be completely different. You're going to write the third act first, and then you're going to eat your way backwards, and you don't even know, and like, you know, when I was first starting out, I was just writing before we were making movies, when the world was my oyster, and I could write about Black Ops helicopters and all that. Yeah, I usually would write the first 10 minutes, and then I would write the most high-octane scene. So I would at least know, like, that's as bad as it's going to get! Right. You know, and here's everybody, and then, like, and then, you know, somehow I'd be like, oh, yeah, and stuff happens in Act Two. And then some shit happens. And
Act Two's a bitch, sucks.
Just completely sucks.
Just, like, go from Act One to Act Three.
Yeah, that's all you want to do is start great, finish great. Everything else, like, and then some stuff happens, he falls in love, and
it's frustrating. It's like Act Two should just be a nap. Yeah, like, everybody take a nap now. When you wake up.
Well, particularly in, like, body count. You know, I wasn't writing horror until my husband started directing, and then he's a really big horror fan. So I really was, like, at gunpoint, you will write horror movies.
You were writing horror movies.
But I got used to the genre, but it's I don't like to kill anyone because I've taken so long to create them. It's like birthing them.
Oh.
I don't create disposable people. So if I'm, you know, if I'm working on a film, there's four people, I don't want to kill any of them. Like,
When I write horror novels, I write the most endearing possible characters. So when I kill them, it hurts.
Oh, absolutely.
It hurts me. But the idea is that it'll hurt the reader. So therefore, anything that happens from there on out is that it's especially with horror, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think with comedy too, kind of go hand in hand. Yeah. But you got to create an all bets are off scenario, because then it is more terrifying and more suspenseful.
And you have such a short amount of time to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you have to. I occasionally write coverage for scripts, not very often, but I hate seeing a lazy introduction, like, you know, oh, they're just having breakfast. It's like, well, why? Unless she's an anorexic, I don't want her to eat breakfast. Like, what? Yeah, you know, why? This is it, dude. This is gonna be like the most significant hymns, you know, this is Todd scene. Like, this is the most Todd has ever in his whole day, in his whole life. And like, whatever him, it is. Yeah, yeah, it's kind of, in a nutshell, it's, you know, it's not real life. Like, art is condensed and contrived and manipulated. And
when
all the mumblecore films came out, and I was just like, no, that's not, no. Don't just talk about your navel. It's not cute. Like,
dialogue
is precious. At least what you're not talking about is important. Like,
right.
I want to feel that you're avoiding something, or that you can't, don't just, you know.
I agree.
I love actors, but whenever they want to, like, improv something, you're like, yeah, no, that's not, thanks, that was good, but let's just go back to what we were doing. Nice. Like,
yeah.
Except funny. That there's great one-liners that you're always so disappointed are not part of the script, you know.
Like, right, right.
The Fugitive, you know, I didn't kill my wife, I don't care, you know. Best line of the whole movie, no, not the script.
Totally Tommy Lee Jones ad-libbed that?
But you could argue that the writer had written such a good character that he just knew
what to say. Yeah, no, I think that's true. And in the end, the writer gets the credit, so
who the hell cares? Yeah, screw that.
Fucking say whatever you want, as long as it's good. I don't give a shit. I actually worked on a movie a long time ago, straight-to-video comedy thing, and we were ad-libbing all the time. I mean, that's what it was about.
Yeah.
Like, the ad-lib. And then they cut mostly just the stuff
that was
written. And I was like, I think you guys fucked up. Because
the ad-lib
was funny. You know, it was a Caddyshack situation.
Oh, right.
Script was, it was okay. It was okay. Yeah. It wasn't bad. But it wasn't that funny.
Yeah.
And the ad-libby shit.
I'm terrified of comedy. It would be so much easier for me to break someone's heart than make them laugh. I mean, just, that's...
Well, as an actor, I find dramatic acting way less
taxing.
Stressful.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, especially, I mean, I would way prefer working on a single camera show to a multi-camera show.
Right.
And it's as simple as I don't feel the pressure to get an audible laugh.
Right.
You know? And I can just concentrate on what I think is funny about the character, you know what I mean, and it winds up, my performance is more organic in that way than if I'm working with the studio audience that needs to react to what I'm saying.
The zombie film that we made and sold, it was actually sort of a mockumentary.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first screening that we had ever was at Cinequest in San Jose, in one of the big theaters, and I remember just sitting there sweating and like the first laugh, I was like, oh, thank God. Like, it was just like this wave came up, like, oh, they laughed.
Oh, thank Christ, God.
You know, and then we went to like 15 festivals all around the world, and it was interesting to see what people would laugh in here, what people laughing in Europe, and but yeah, I mean, it was Irish zombies, and it was an American film crew going to film this poor family that has this son who turns into a zombie, and they're trying to save him or take care of him. And so we have that kind of the typical, like, asshole American director.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and people would, like, laugh. You're like, oh, yeah, I know. I know that guy is. But, like, in Europe, they would just, like, lose their mind.
Right.
Just, like, wet their pants. I just, like, couldn't, like, ah, it's America, it's so funny. And I'm like, you know, the Brits just thought it was like, ah.
That's hilarious.
Because it's just everything about them to that, you know. But over here, it was more like the Irish they thought were hilarious, and watching The Priest and all that kind of stuff. And, but, yeah, but I had forgotten there was even that much humor in it. I was like, you know, this is a horror film, but, you know, a little bit quirky. We actually had already filmed it, and then District 9 came out, and then that kind of informed the edit.
Oh, okay.
Because we had the same situation where it's like, now we're leaving documentary world, and how are we seeing all this? Like, right. We'll just see it. We'll just
didn't
like,
they do okay. that in one of those Wreck movies? Do you like those Wreck movies?
Oh, the little
like video paranormal, like, record, yeah. the zombie movies, and they made the American mm-hmm. version was Quarantine of the original.
Oh, right.
Which I thought was one of the best found footage movies I've seen. The yeah. American version of that, because they the entire time found reasons to justify why they were still filming the shit.
Right, right.
Whereas when you watch, what's the monster, J.J. Abrams monster movie, that just did this weird kind of spin-off, Cloverfield.
Oh, Cloverfield, yeah.
You know, the whole time I'm like, what are you doing, T.J. Miller? Put down the fucking camera and run, you dumbass.
Right. Who's still there with the, No, absolutely. I think, yeah, I was coming at it from more of like a Christopher Guest kind of, you mm-hmm. know. And I also really wanted to talk about reality television. I wanted to talk about the fact that we sit there and watch these interviews.
Sure.
We had a lot of like interviews on the couch. And I basically took the idea that it's like one of those ones on Discovery of like a family with a disabled child, you know, so you're getting the perspective.
Right,
it's
right.
It's just zombies, so it's absurd.
It's just, yeah.
And the reason we even came up with a comic approach was because the Irish are so nonplussed by things that, you know, zombies would just be another fucking thing to deal with.
Fuck's
sake, you know, unemployment, fucking zombies, you know what? You know, my husband comes from Ireland, and we actually got to shoot on the block that he grew up on.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, it was really working class. Like, there were kids trying to sell us, like, stolen televisions, like, while we were there, and it was, like, hilarious, you know, travelers and the horses and the whole bit. You know, so, yeah, like, in fact, we were shooting one day, and somebody from the Irish Times was coming to investigate a real shooting. And he came around the corner, and there was, like, 20 people covered in blood. And the man nearly had a heart attack because we were like, no, 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 we're making a movie. And he's like, well, this is much more interesting. So we just stopped and wrote about our movie instead of, we got, like, a full page in the Irish Times, which was really fun. But
that's cool. Yeah. What's the movie you've got now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, so we just shot a teaser for a movie called Tailgaters, which is a little bit of a, we mentioned Spielberg before, Spielberg's first movie, Duel.
Sure, yeah, Duel, yeah, right? I love Duel. TV
little,
movie.
Yeah, it's a little bit Duel, it's a little bit Texas Chainsaw, and a little bit Wicker Man.
Oh, Wicker Man.
Yeah.
I assume the Edward Woodward one.
Yeah,
not
yeah, yeah. No,
the far superior and way funnier yeah. Nick Cage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Wicker Man, I gotta say, the original, I thought was a snooze.
Yeah. But it's creepy, though. It was of its time, for real.
Yeah, it's got a creepy element, but God, that Neil LaBute remake is a treasure.
Not the bees.
It is one of the worst movies.
Really?
It's like, as soon as it starts, you'll within 10 minutes, you'll be in hysterics.
Oh, my God.
And by the end, you'll be crying, laughing. It's hilarious. Well,
the main story is that it's these two couples that are driving from L.A. to San Francisco.
Mm.
And they're going to San Francisco to start a restaurant. And it's like the chef is there, his girlfriend, who's a psychic nutritionist.
What is that?
Well, you know.
Someone who can read your mind.
She kind of reikis and figures your aura out and gives you, you know, nutritional advice. Typical Californian, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. Hybrid, right?
A hybrid, yeah.
And then also with him is his college buddy from Virginia, who's the money guy. He's like an old trust fund baby, southern guy.
Sure.
And somebody new in his life. And so they end up starting to become menaced by this 72 Buick Skylark. It's sort of rat rod painted black, and they can't tell who's in it.
That's so cool. My car, when I was a kid, my parents' car, was a 72 Buick Skylark.
No way!
It was green.
Oh, my God. You have to come see her. We call her Elvira. She's amazing.
Machine. Oh, wow. I would like to see that. Is it convertible?
No.
Oh, okay.
They are an amazingly heavy machine, though.
It's a huge car.
You pick up the trunk and you're like, Jesus Christ, have we ever drive anything like that? They're really long. Yeah, right.
We had a convertible one, and it was green.
Uh-huh.
And we used to call it the
tank. Original color of this is like a pea green, like a metallic-y.
Yeah, that's what ours was.
You can still see inside the trunk what it was. But it's been spray painted.
And it looked like a tank because it was huge.
Well, I bought it in Van Nuys.
Oh, no kidding.
When I came to pick it up, I said, you know, I don't mean to sound funny, but I need to make sure that two women can fit in the trunk. And the guy said, I'm pretty sure that two women have been in this trunk already. Don't worry about it.
There may be a couple
maybe
still
there. Maybe they might still be in there, as a matter of fact. But when we were looking for places to shoot just the teaser, I ended up in Bakersfield, and it was very weird because the farm that we shot on, they end up getting derailed to this farm, and there's a cult involved and cannibalism, and it just gets out of hand.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So
sounds all right.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a total love letter to California. It's like got hipper rednecks, if you can imagine.
Right.
The guys got sleeves of tattoos, and they work on cars, and they're just a little bit smarter. And,
right.
You know, but Bakersfield was that, and I didn't know that. and our cult leader is, the entire time is being interviewed on NPR. We don't know that he's behind everything, but so we get to hear his philosophy, and he's kind of like a hyper environmental nut job, you know, like a eco warrior kind of guy. And but he talks about coming out of his mother coming out of the Dust Bowl, you know, surviving the Dust Bowl farms, and that I realized Bakersfield is where they all settled, so that really is where they came.
Right.
And the farm that we chose, the guys there actually do fix up cars for stock car racing. I mean, it was a little terrifying for a moment there, like, we might become part of this movie while we were shooting there.
Crazy.
But we got just great footage out there, and so it's you know, but we've spent a lifetime spending all of our money on equipment, and so we can do a lot more with lower budgets than.
How long did it take you to shoot?
We just shot a couple days, just for the teaser, just to get people excited.
Okay. Are you kickstarting it? Is that thereabouts? Are you just trying to find investors with a?
I for a long time I was kind of morally opposed to Kickstarter, only because I actually saw a lot of abuse. Actually saw a lot of like films that got financed
that didn't get made.
Didn't get made, and the money got misused, and someone's girlfriend got new tits. And I mean, like, seriously, like, especially if it's like a derivative work, like a fan film or something.
That is an important first step.
Well, it is
a film. Getting the fake press.
I know, and I found that a lot of people who were doing Kickstarter were these guys who were already like entertainment lawyers who wanted to be producers, so they didn't. It's not like they were broke. They just didn't want to use their money.
Yeah, that
right?
drives me nuts.
And they wanted to basically fat cat around with this money. And so they would go to Comic-Con on this money. You know, they just wanted to play producer. They wanted to get an office somewhere.
Sure.
And sit somewhere and rent offices for a year on the Kickstarter money, and the film doesn't get made. And
that's dumb.
But, so I, for a long time, and also I'm just kind of a snob, and I think that if someone actually with a brain bestows money on you, it seems more significant than a bunch of people.
Arbitrary people.
Yeah.
That you're begging for.
And, you know, it turns out that the producers are right, that the only what 18 to 25 year olds want to see is what Gus gets. You know, everyone thought, oh, Kickstarter, finally I'll get that Somalian documentary made. No. It's Star Trek fan films.
Right,
So, but horror is one of those genres that kind of unifies people. So you end up still getting actors involved that have a certain fandom.
Every now and then, these weird sci-fi movies, like I you want to talk about allegory. It's if it's an indie sci-fi movie, then it has a shot
right.
at having that.
Well, the problem with indie sci-fi is that they have to spend so much time in a studio because you can't, like, you know, if you're doing a drama, you can just go to a farm and shoot a drama.
Right.
The farm is the production value.
Right.
But if you're trying to have a spaceship and, you know, you gotta have a lot of money.
Well, sci-fi doesn't need,
work.
But I was thinking more like, you know, like
Apocalypse,
like a splice.
At least out here you can have, like, the planet surface. You've got, like,
or you just have an alien with it, like, or splice. Did you see that movie Splice? Adrian Brody, about, like, he creates a weird.
Not like a Dune spinoff?
Lady monster. No, it's not the spice.
Okay.
It's splice.
Oh, splice.
Genetically spliced, like, lady, and it's got all these weird. It's creepy. It's got all these, like, incestuous
Adrian
undertones.
Adrian Brody's pretty creepy. He's
a
creepy guy.
Yeah, he's. Well, I don't know if he's a creepy guy in person, but he does do a lot of creepy work, that's for sure. There's that. And this is from probably the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But I always liked that movie Cube. Do you ever see that?
Cube, yeah. That was all. Was that. What's her name, right?
I don't know who.
Who's in it? The woman?
I don't know the lady's name, isn't it? I just like.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of The Cell. I'm thinking of The Cell.
No, not The Cell. The Cube is about like a group of people, and they wake up in a room. And they don't know how they got there. And the room has, like, door. Each wall has a portal that you can open. And if you open it, there's another room on the other side of it. And you can go in there, but then some of the rooms have deadly traps in them.
Like a Saw kind of thing? Or like better than Saw?
It's better than Saw. Yeah. It's more thoughtful than Saw. I mean, Saw's fine.
Yeah.
For what it is. But this isn't torture porn. Some of it's gory. Like, the traps are gory. But it's not like... It's more like, can I go into this room? So the characters have to develop, with what little they have, tests. Like, throwing a shoe into the room to see if anything happens to the shoe before they get in. But the thing is sometimes the traps are...
The other new thing now, too, with... we were actually approached about creating a video game already from the movie because it's a car situation.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So it's already a car game, and you can go on the farm, and you can have, you know, little pigs that you, you know... a lot of the stuff that we do is, like, fairy tales. So we have, like, the three little pigs are in it. Like, there's...
Oh, that's good. Mask, that's cool.
And we have, you know, the girl in a red hoodie, and it's little subtle little nods and a lot of, you know... But yeah, it was... It's kind of my little... I wanted to write about California before, in case I ever leave here, which could happen, you know, any minute. I could just be like, fuck that.
Fuck this.
I'm going to South of France. Fuck that. Well, I still am in love with it now.
What do you mean we didn't legalize pot again? Fuck this state.
Well, but you talk about Duel. Like, Duel was, God, amazing. I mean, I love
that. Oh, that's a great movie.
How they got an 18-wheeler to move the way that car did. I mean, when it does this sort of snake thing where it comes around.
It's scary.
And, you know, and it's got that Twilight Zone moment when he's in the cafe and he can't figure out who in there is the driver, and those great sweaty, you know, fishbowl lens
moments. Creepy.
So we're probably going to try to shoot a little bit. That's it's on Highway 14, sorry, we're near Santa Clarita where they filmed that. So it's actually a little bit sectioned off from the main highway now. It's too small of a highway for anyone to really use. So we could easily film up there. And
sure.
But yeah, good old Kern County. Kern County, you can shoot without... free permits. The permits are free.
Oh, nice.
You just have to have your insurance shit together, and they will help you, and they will... They're... Yeah, it's worth driving an hour and 45 minutes outside of L.A.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah, if you get that kind of...
Your bleary-eyed actors have to take them back and forth, but it's still worth it, you know?
Right.
To be out there, absolutely. But yeah, Bakersfield. Bakersfield's creepy as fuck, apparently.
Yeah. I have a friend who's from up near there.
It's creepy and hip, and...
It depends on what neighborhood you're in.
Yeah.
I mean, Bakersfield has some really wealthy areas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
you know,
those aren't...
That's what I mean. It's kind of that culmination of, like, you know, the wine, you know, the vineyards that are there, and, like, that's what we were trying to kind of do with these foodies. Like, what if the foodies become the food? How does that become, like... And the sort of like this tension between, like, we really grow the food, you just talk about it and, you know, fetishize it.
Yeah.
We are the people of the earth, and you are not. And so that kind of tension happens.
And it's like you should have a scene where one of the foodies is getting gutted.
Oh, yeah. We have killer, all kinds of... Oh.
Killer takes the organs out and goes, look, you're organic.
We have a lot of, like, hanging upside down, like, meat kind of
smoking. Oh, good.
That was another thing.
That's Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We had to really search high and low for a wooden barn, because barns are not wood anymore.
Oh, they're all made out of metal?
Yeah, they're all like this kind of Quonset hoodie. They don't look like... They don't read.
Oh, yeah.
So I was actually able to find something from, like, the 1940s that was still intact, that this guy had just, like, whatever, you can use one of my old barns.
That's
like,
cool.
What?
You know, that's awesome.
If you're willing to clean out all of the brown recluse spider waste, you can have... Oh, yeah, it was really a little bit nasty that way.
No thank you. Pass.
Pass.
I don't like any spiders, let alone brown recluses.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus, yeah, Lord.
Absolutely. But, yeah, so that's, you know, I'm done pimping out my film.
That's... Great, I can't wait to see it. It sounds exciting.
Yeah, man.
I hope it gets made very, very soon up in Bakersfield.
Yeah.
So you got to wrap up your show here?
Yeah, I'll go wrap up the show. So thank you so much, Todd, for coming and being my guest.
Thanks for having me on your show.
I know you're a busy guy.
Super busy.
And I've been watching your show that you're on.
Oh, good. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Well, thank you.
It's you know, it's an edgy show.
It's an edgy program.
It is. Like, it dances kind of dangerously to the edge of my sensibility. Like, I laugh, but then I feel a little dirty about it.
Yeah.
But that, I'm not sure if I can hang in there. I'm like, I don't know.
If I can keep going, yeah.
In small doses, I could. Yeah. But talented people you're working with.
They are. They are very talented. It's great. It's great.
And they're all here. Experience.
Yeah, they're all here. Well, they are when we're shooting.
Yeah. Do some of them crawl back across the pond?
Chris does. Chris yeah. Gere only comes out for hilarious. Work. And Des Borges, who plays the PTSD veteran guy,
right.
he lives in New York.
How did you get involved in the, if you don't mind?
Well, I auditioned for it, but the showrunner, Steve Falk, yeah. is a college buddy of mine.
Oh, wow.
We've been really
See,
close
those college
ever
buddies
since.
Come in handy.
Yeah, you just, if you just cultivate a friendship for nearly 30 years,
mm-hmm.
no, more than, well, how long would it be? It's 26 years now we've known each other.
People think that I'm sentimental, but I still tell people, work with who you like. And like who you work with, and don't. You can't play this game where you're like, oh, I can pick and choose someone who can help me, and like, no. You just have to like cultivate these sincere friendships, and then hopefully one of you hits.
Yeah, one of you hits and then
reaches back for you if they can.
Yeah, and then hopefully has big enough coattails for. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I used to fantasize when I was a kid. That was my fantasy, was to make it so I could hire all my friends. That was the fantasy.
And again, with like the budget level that we're dealing with, that's always the fear. Because people will be like, oh, I think I can get so-and-so involved. You know, like, the people who are involved in these franchises, like Sinister and whatever. It's like, as soon as they do, they're going to throw all my friends off this film.
Right.
But even your friends are like, go ahead, throw us off. Like, you know, you can't help us back here. But it's like...
Right.
But it's sort of that sort of gutting where it's like, okay, now I want everyone in this film to be 18... No, I want, you know, it's like, I just want to make a grown-up movie where someone my age could relate to who's getting chopped up.
Well, I agree, but that's the state of cinema has always been geared towards the youth, which I don't understand anymore.
I don't know either, because our generation is obsessed with horror.
Yeah.
You know, and everything else, so why can't we continue to age into...
No, I agree. Well, we're eventually going to be that untapped market that Hollywood will make a First Wives Club. You know,
right, the
and then
rumors.
And then it'll make a huge amount of money, and
it'll be,
and it'll be like,
zombie club,
hey, that's because there's no other movies for people of that age.
Well, people aren't even our age. That's my point.
Well,
like, they're
right.
all still going to Comic-Con, and like, you can make those movies and put our age in it, and we will still
right.
cheer
yeah,
on the slime monster or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
that's absolutely
not,
true.
No one's grown up at all. Not at
no.
all. Certainly not the men.
We're a bunch of goddamn children.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I know I am.
All right. And on that note, we will take us out. So good night, everybody.